Joseph Chami is the former director of the UN Population Division and currently research director at the Center for Migration Studies. Thank you very much for joining the Global Observatory. Today, the United Nations announced the birth of the 7th billionth person on planet Earth. What does that actually mean for us? Why should we care?
This marking of this demographic milestone of world population of 7 billion is largely symbolic. The date of 7 billion is calculated. We know that the population is larger than it's ever been before, and the date is an approximation to mark this. We are concerned, as we have always been, with population numbers, their composition, their distribution. So it's very important to take an assessment and look into some of the details. And the number 7 billion represents a complex set of issues, fertility, mortality, migration, aging, urbanization. So it's only the tip of the iceberg, the demographic iceberg. There's much more that needs to be looked at, including, as I mentioned, those demographic components, as well as the distribution, the growth rate, the aging. All these issues of our concern, and the more we know about these issues, the better we are able to plan and provide good living conditions for people all over the world.
So let's get a little more specific. You mentioned the distribution. A lot of attention goes on the absolute population numbers. However, we know the fertility rates are very different from one country to the other. In fact, the distribution of population across continent is dramatically changing. What is the importance of these relative changes? For example, what does it mean to have Africa's population grow to 5 times that of Europe's by the end of the century?
It's important to understand what is causing this dynamic and why we're getting larger populations and redistribution and various things. And it's a very simple process because there are just three ingredients to population change: fertility, mortality, and migration. In the very beginning, 200,000 years ago, of course, people were dying very early and often because of high mortality. And they had high births. So every group at that time had to have large numbers of children in order to sustain their tribe, their group, and their population. Now, these people in Africa, Eastern Africa, then moved out of that region, the Homo sapiens, and started populating the world. And then around the Industrial Revolution, something wonderful started happening. Mortality rates came down. And this decline in mortality, I believe, is humanity's greatest achievement, bringing down death rates so children and mothers and adults and grandparents all survive to long old ages in a healthy lifestyle. The difference between the fertility rate and the declining mortality resulted in this rapid growth. And that's what we're seeing in this transition. Europe went through it first, then it spread to North America, then it spread to Asia, now it's going to Africa. So Africa will experience a great deal of growth, as the Europeans did, and the North Americans and the Asians, last, until they bring their fertility rates down. So this means we'll see a redistribution. And as you pointed out, Europe was proportionally for centuries about a quarter of the world's population. Now it's only half that, 12%, and in the future it'll be halved again to around 6 or 7% of the world's population. This is enormously important, shifting of the population distribution. And Africa, because it's in the last continent going through this transition, has enormous growth potential. At the mid-century, the 20th century, they were about 230 million. At the end of the century, they were a billion. And we expect, the United Nations expects, that by the end of the 21st century, they could be several billion. Nigeria alone, according to the projections, could be larger than Europe. But it's a complex phenomenon. Some countries have birth rates below replacement, less than 2 children. Many of the European countries, Russia, China, and many others. There are some 60 countries that have a birth rate below 2 children per woman. Other countries have 5, 6, or 7 children per woman. So it's a very complex situation. We're looking at great diversity. And because of this diversity, we're going to have a change in the composition, which will have repercussions, implications for politics, development, food crises, culture, music. Everything will be changing because as you change the distribution of people, those cultures that increase will have a bigger weight. Those that have decreasing will start declining.
You mentioned development. You know, in the past, it was believed that the population growth was needed for economic growth. And we know that today is not necessarily the case anymore. What are the implications of having so many people on the planet on economic development, especially on the global fight to reduce poverty and improve global health?
You have to be very clear because there are many skeptics about this, economists. Of course, if the death rate's very high and people are dying off, you're not going to have economic growth. So you have to have a low death rate for development. And that's one of the indicators that many institutions, the United Nations Development Program, the UN, European Union, it's always low mortality is a good indicator of development. And that means then you have to have some kind of semblance of a balance, because if you're declining, if you're having few children and the population's declining, there are other challenges. But you're correct. You don't have to have rapid growth in order to have economic growth. And we have many examples. Japan, Germany, they're growing economically very well compared to some other countries, say some African countries like Mali, Uganda, that are growing demographically very rapidly, but their economy is not growing very rapidly. So we have different models. You can export. You can start investing in your human resources. You can innovate. So the most rapidly growing populations in the world today are not the ones that are doing best economically. So we are moving away from that model. And the other thing is very important. We're moving away from the argument that quantity is the best. Sometimes you want quality, not quantity. And there are other considerations as well with regard to this. You can invest in the environment. You can invest in clean energy. And there, it's not necessarily more people, but it's changing the quality of life.
Another factor is peace and security and stability. Is there a connection between violence and demographic?
It's not a sufficient variable, but it does play a role. You have in the past rapidly growing countries, Europe, North America, Canada, Australia, and you didn't have war. Other times you have in Europe many countries not growing at all and they go to war. So simply because you have a growing population doesn't mean you're going to have war. However, when the population is growing rapidly and there are other issues that are have a bearing on it, such as water, food, land, then a growing population exacerbates the situation. You have to adjust rapidly to these changes, and you have competition for sometimes limited resources. So this is part of history. Rapidly growing population has consequences, and at times when the resources and the circumstances are right, it can lead to violence and war. And that's why we're trying to expedite the transition, to bring down the birth rates so they're in harmony with the death rates. In the past, we had high birth rates, high death rates. The transition, when the death rates came down, the birth rates stayed high. We had very rapid growth. Now we're moving to a situation we have low birth rates and low death rates, some kind of stability.
So it seems to imply that there is, in some way, a way to influence demographic. In other words, demographic is not destiny. Are there policies to slow down population growth? What kind of alternatives we have to alleviate the pressure of so many people on the planet?
Governments have always had policies to influence demographics. Immunization, public health, they've always tried to influence mortality levels. It doesn't matter if the country's communist, capitalist, socialist, freewheeling, they all try to reduce mortality rates to have their citizens and their families live healthy, long lives. In addition, countries today all have policies on immigration. There are very few examples I can think of where you have open borders. People can come and go as they wish. Every government has borders or regions like the European Union. You need documents, you need to go through passports, visa, and so on. The area that is of concern for most people is with regard to fertility, policies with regard to fertility. This often challenges religious doctrine. It challenges many issues of family and who's in charge and so on. But there are also many benefits. Sometimes they give you tax deductions if you have children. Sometimes they give you incentives. You get certain monthly bonuses if you have certain children. Other times they provide other types of incentives, such as preschool, after school, they provide maternity, paternity leave. Some are generous, some are not. So we can influence those with incentives and disincentives, and we've seen those. The most radical example, of course, is China, or with their one-child policy, where they made it very clear they were wishing to reduce fertility. Now, aside from the human rights issue, most people view that it was a rather effective policy, despite the fact that the rates were coming down anyway. I think the Chinese, in this case, will probably relax their policy in the future because of the distortions in the age structure and also the repercussions it's going to be having on their labor force and also the ratio of the elderly to the workers. But all countries have some policies, some indirect, some direct, with regard to fertility, and most are aiming to achieve what the UN has endorsed, which is the right of couples and individuals to choose the number and spacing of their children. And once that happens, you usually find a small family size. You look in the Americas, you look in the Pacific, East Asia, all these rates are coming down, and you even see them in diverse areas, Vietnam, Iran, Algeria, Turkey, you're seeing Brazil, families, small families.
When you mention family, we cannot avoid to think about the role of women in society. What do you think has been the impact of the changing role of women on society?
One of the most dramatic changes that came about at the end of the 19th and throughout the 20th century is the changing role and status of women. It is absolutely incredible. I think historians will look back, say this is a remarkable period. It has impacted every possible aspect of human life. It's affected the household. It's affected the state. It's affected international relations. Educating women has basically increased and doubled the CPU power of the human species. We have now women participating in every possible area of human activity. They're going to colleges. They're taking employment. They're having careers. And this, I think, is consistent with human rights. And also, it's important for societal development. And it's affected demographics. As women become educated and become fully integrated in society, they have more control over their reproduction, more control over their own decisions, rather than having it imposed upon them, as we've seen in much of the past. So this development is spreading worldwide. I don't think it's going to be stopped. There are certain areas of resistance, certain traditional communities and leaders are resisting this, but it's going to be happening all over the world, and we'll see the repercussions everywhere. And when you educate women, you basically educate children as well. Educating mothers, educating aunts, educating grandmothers tends to trickle down to the children and grandchildren and society, and I think this is all for the good. It's important to keep in mind, though, with regard to the population growth, that the 20th century was the rapid growth. The population quadrupled during the 20th century. That's unlikely to happen in the 21st century. What's likely to happen in the 21st century, the major demographic issue is population aging. Dealing with an older population, how to deal with them. And we're seeing this in country after country with pensions being slashed, health entitlements being, with severe budget deficits, this is a big constraint. And this is going to affect especially women. As you know, women biologically outlive men. They live longer. If they're married, the wife usually survives her husband. And so we're going to see this effect of aging be especially burdensome on women, who are the major caregivers and also the dominant majority among the oldest old, those above 80 years old.
In conclusion, let me ask you one question on the situation in the Arab world. Some pointed out to population shift as a major force behind the so-called Arab Spring. Is that the case? And if so, how?
I think certainly there was a major demographic component to the Arab Spring. Large numbers of youth, unemployed, unmarried, in urban centers. We have seen, of course, a rapid urbanization of the world, and this has especially been the case among the Arab countries. You take a country or city like Sana'a, and you see it's a small town in the late 70s, 1980, of several hundred thousand. Now it's several million. Same with Riyadh in Saudi Arabia. It's 400,000. All of a sudden, it's several million. Rapid growth and concentration of young men and women who are looking for work, who have become, many of them, educated, and they can't find employment. They can't get married because they don't have employment. They can't set up a household. Great frustration, and it makes a big difference. The example I give often is if you're in the middle of a farm in Kansas and you're protesting, you may get the attention of a few cows. But if you're in Manhattan or Riyadh or Cairo or Tunis and you start marching with a poster, you'll find hundreds following you. And these people who are young are energetic and they're concentrated, so it had a very large impact. Now, countries like Yemen, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and many of the other Gulf countries are growing very rapidly, very rapid growth. It's not only because of the large numbers of people in the reproductive ages and high fertility relatively, but they also have immigration in the Gulf states in these places. That's also contributing to factors. Laid upon this also in some countries are the demographic differentials by tribe, by religious group, by ethnic group, and this also has to be taken into account. But absolutely, the demographic component, the youth bulge, and large numbers of young men and women unemployed, unmarried, and looking for changes had a very large role in this. And we know the spark that caused this. We know all the underlying factors. And we're going to continue seeing this type of thing until there's some kind of resolution in these countries with regard to development.
Mr. Chami, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.